are listening to Historically Present.
Hello, everyone. My name is Peter.
And my name is Serge.
And you're listening to Historically Present. This is the podcast where we talk about the intersection of the past, the present, and how that will all impact the future.
That's right.
And boy, do we have a fantastic episode for you all. And we are not going to spend a ton of time here in the beginning because we're gonna get to it like very quickly. But yeah, Serge, just give a little synopsis here before we hop into it.
Yeah, totally. So today's podcast is featuring a guy by the name of Roman Sheremeta, who is a Ukrainian economist. And I know Roman personally from he's actually been to our church and did a couple of things with people around me, and he is just a phenomenal Ukrainian economist. He's he really has influence in the government and impact, and so I thought he'd be a great person just to really get onto the podcast to talk about sort of a different perspective of this Ukrainian conflict, the war that Russia has started in Ukraine, and learn a little bit about, what's happening from that side of things. And so that's why we reached out to Roman, got him to agree. And we've got a really, really great interview with him today.
Yep. And we will be hopping that in a second. I'll just give you a quick teaser so that you do know what you are in store for. Let's just say he's got some people that he knows very high up that you've heard about. Number one. Number two, you get to hear Ukrainians' true thoughts on Putin.
Yep. Which shouldn't be hard to guess.
But at the same time, some great insight, especially for those of us in the West, especially here in America, how we should probably be thinking about Ukraine. So without further ado, we're going to hop right into this interview. We truly hope you enjoyed it because we had a blast doing it. And thank you again to Roman for coming on. Thank you so much, sir.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to the Historically Present podcast. My name is Serge, and we got Peter here.
Yes, indeed.
And today we're very excited to have our first guest on the podcast, Roman Sheremeta. So, just a quick bio introduction of Roman. So he is an associate professor of economics at the Weatherhead Studio for Management in Case Western University. You're also a research affiliate at the Economic Science Institute of Chapman University. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I still hold that position.
Good deal. Roman has a PhD, so it's Dr. Roman, in economics from Purdue University. He was listed as one of the top economic thinkers of Ukrainian descent by Forbes in 2015, which is really awesome.
Yes.
He's a top-rated young economist in the world, according to the Ideas ranking of 2018. And he's also recognized as one of the best 40 under 40 professors by Poets and Quants in 2019. Roman, again, huge welcome to the podcast. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
You know what you're talking about. So, thank you.
Well, I don't know. I hope I can live up to the introduction.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining. And when the war really started, we see a lot of changes that have happened in the media, in social media, especially with a lot of the Ukrainian friends that I've had that have just started posting a lot about what's happening. And so we kind of wanted to chat with you a little bit about that. But maybe before that, anything else you want to tell us about yourself? I think you're married, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So I'm married. One thing that is very important, probably, especially relating to today's events, I'm actually founding rector of American University Kyiv. Literally the day before Russia started bombing Kyiv, I was in Kyiv. And then I moved to the United States to pick up my wife. Wow. Because I was on CBS, I believe, or Fox News, and giving an interview. And I literally said, look, guys, Russia is not that stupid to attack Ukraine. Obviously, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Russia is that stupid. But anyway, that has happened. And so I actually couldn't go back to Ukraine because of that. And so I went to Kyiv only after it was liberated. So That's when I went, and I went to Bucha, to Hostomel, and then later times I went to Mykolaiv, which is right now in a very difficult situation. And I'm planning to go back to Kyiv, dedicate a couple of years of my life in Ukraine, and open up American University Kyiv.
That's great. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of your vision for that American University of Kyiv? What are your thoughts of, like, how would you like that to look? And the plan for that, I guess. Yeah.
Especially in kind of this new situation we kind of find ourselves now a little bit.
Sure. So. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Look, we obviously were open and planning to open the university before the war.
Right.
So nobody has planned that. But now we actually have our first students that came along. We have 152 students that are officially enrolled in September. Great. They're taking classes online because we cannot have everybody in Kyiv. But, you know, that's basically where we stand right now. But the vision, of course, is much larger than that, not only in numbers, but also what we want to do. So we want to train the next generation of leaders, of also students and people who will rebuild Ukraine. You know, this is really important, that the fight that is happening right now for freedom, for Ukraine, it's not only happening with weapons, but it's also happening with ideas, with within our minds and hearts. And so this is very important for us, that we build that next generation of human capital for Ukraine that will be able to not only rebuild, but modernize and make Ukraine into a global country.
Is the school, is it taught in English or is it taught in Ukrainian?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's completely an English school. It's okay. The curriculum and the whole programs are all developed together with Arizona State University. So it's a completely English taught school. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's really exciting. We'll be definitely keeping an eye on kind of all the developments of that.
Yeah.
Of that school. Sure. So wanted to dive in a little bit deeper into, and I know you have a slight time commitment here, So we'll try to go fast here, but. So Ukraine obviously has gone through a lot of changes in the last, you know, really in the last 5 years, you could say a ton of changes have happened in Ukraine. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what was the trajectory of Ukraine leading up to February 24th? Where was Ukraine going economically, culturally, that kind of stuff?
Look, Ukraine was on a really good trajectory. So if you were to, after Yanukovych fled Ukraine and, right. Some of the reforms that Poroshenko started and then Zelensky, they really were going in the right direction. Just as an evidence for that was the pretty high growth of GDP. And in fact, when COVID has impacted everybody, it was actually Ukraine proven to be fairly resilient to the impact of COVID. And so once main restrictions were lifted up, the GDP really skyrocketed for Ukraine. It went all the way, to $200 billion, which may not sound large for American economy, which is measured in trillions. But, for Ukraine, there was a very significant, growth. And it was literally, it peaked since the independence 1991. Things were looking really bright. I mean, the new industries were developing. The IT sector is very strong, was growing. There were a lot of good reforms, medical reforms, reforms in higher education, economic reforms. Ukraine was really on the trajectory to become a true global, partner and a part of European Union. So things were looking really good.
Yeah, I will say, obviously since the invasion, there's been a lot of companies that, showcase their support and things like that for Ukraine. I think what was shocking to me was in my industry where I do a lot of digital marketing and stuff of that nature, the amount of companies in the kind of software world that had some sort of component in Ukraine, let alone started in Ukraine, was actually pretty mind blowing to me
Oh, absolutely! I mean, one of our supporters, EPAM, company, EPAM Technologies. It's an S&P 500 company.
Yeah.
One of the biggest businesses, and sort of also their staff members and their the product developers are actually from Ukraine, in Ukraine. And so we are very proud that they're sponsoring our university. But on top of that, they also when the war started, they right away pulled their business out of Russia and made a very strong commitment that they are dedicated to Ukraine. And so they have promised to invest additional $100 million into developing of IT in Ukraine. So this is pretty pretty exciting.
That's great news. Yeah. Okay, so out of curiosity then, because you kind of talked about like the growth there and everything kind of leading up, right? And you kind of brought it, alluded to the point, like this would be a stupid time for Putin to do something of this nature. clearly he did. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, obviously there's the concept of NATO overall, but you let me know if I'm wrong here, but was there some aspect of here he didn't like the way Ukraine was going trajectory-wise? For this growth, potentially, or what do you think?
Look, NATO is a complete, misinformation. It's a propaganda story that has been repeated over and over in the U.S. by mostly, I'm ashamed, Republicans, which I actually, more affiliated with the Republican
right.
Party.
Yeah,
before, yeah, but, we were talking about that too.
Yeah, and so it's not the reason. Just to give you a simple example.
Yep.
The support for NATO in Ukraine before the annexation of Crimea was about 10%, yeah. 10 to 15%. Mm-hmm. So nobody wanted to go to Ukraine. Ukrainian constitution, in its constitution, was a sovereign independent country that doesn't belong to any blocs and stuff like that. Since the annexation of Crimea in 2014, that support jumped to 50%. Again, 50-50, people were sort of split. Yeah.
Right.
But since February, basically in the past literally half a year, that number went to 90% of support
wow.
for NATO. So, and then go with Sweden and Finland right. that now are becoming the members of NATO. So if anything, the actions of Putin have brought NATO closer and have revived NATO as an alliance. So that excuse is just silly to me because... Yeah. You did everything to the contrary to what you were saying.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, the only reasonable explanation that is there is that it's an imperialistic desire
yeah.
of a group of people to bring back the USSR, to bring back the mighty, Tsar era. And so this is what's happening. And put this together with a brainwashed ideology that some kind of superiority of Russian people over Ukrainian people, you get these genocidal mm-hmm. thoughts. And so as a result, right. you have what you have today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think the exact opposite of what Putin was hoping for literally happened, right? He was hoping for a ceasing of NATO to come closer, but that's literally what happened is NATO is now even closer at the doorsteps of Russia. So that's very interesting. Sort of on the cultural topic, we hear it, and I think to your point, a lot of the conservative media has been,
yeah,
I would say mm-hmm. very unfair, very unnuanced when they talk about Ukraine, but they do bring up, corruption. They do bring up oligarchs, and we know that it has
sure.
existed,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
My question to you is that, like, this war, being Ukrainian myself, as you are. I feel like a lot has been changing in that specific space of corruption and oligarchy and whatnot. What are your thoughts on that? Like, where is that going? And has that war really yeah. done a big impact? Or, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this rhetoric of what about, you basically start with the basic premise that Russia is a terrorist state, that they are literally acting like fascists in 1939.
Right.
Instead of focusing on that, and if you saw yesterday, the prisoner, one of the prisoners of war, was standing in front of the Senate and giving a testimony, Ukrainian prisoner of war. I mean, look, there's like, it doesn't matter all these other things, because the most yeah. important thing, we have a terrorist state, we have atrocities and genocide that is committed, and so period. Period. There's no other discussion. But then there's people that will say, what about, you know, Ukraine has corruption? Right, what about this? I mean, of course, there is a dialogue that needs to be made about these things. But let's go even with that argument. So I actually happen to know a little bit President Zelensky. I'm actually on advisory board for the President Zelensky on the recovery plan for Ukraine. I happen to know his first prime minister very well, Oleksiy Goncharuk, who after Zelensky fired him, he actually came and stayed with me in Cleveland for a couple days because he wanted to see some of the properties that are owned by one of the oligarchs here, because he was a big guy who was going against the oligarchs. And Kolomoisky actually has properties the Westin Hotel, and his son actually went to Cleveland State University.
No kidding.
So he went to Cleveland to see that himself, and we went to the building that was surrounded by FBI agents at one point of time. He sort of, you know. But anyway, my point is that if you just go with that, and I actually happen to know people from the government, and Oleksiy Goncharuk, even though he was fired by Zelensky, he said that Zelensky was the least corrupt. In fact, he said that he was not corrupt at all as a president. He is very, let's say, incompetent because he's a, you know, he's a comedian. He didn't study to be an economist or a lawyer, you know. But, you know, nonetheless, his intentions were actually very correct. And so Oleksiy, the former prime minister, he told me, Roman, look, this is the president that I would not want to work again for, but, you know, for a reason that it's not professional. He's not a professional, but not that he's corrupt by any means.
Yeah.
And so basically that just to point out that our government, the new government, was becoming really the least corrupt government in the history of Ukraine. So let's put that on the table. On top of that, now we actually have a real fight against the oligarchs. Kolomoisky has ran away. I mean, right now, today, there was Dnipro City has confiscated the rights for Kolomoisky to run their airport because he had a monopoly over there. I just sent the same information to the mayor of Ivano-Frankivsk, and I said, guys, you should do the same with Ivano-Frankivsk airport. Get it out of the oligarchs, you know, holding. Medvedchuk is gone. So some of these big oligarchs literally are completely lost their hold on Ukraine. So both of these arguments, the corruption and oligarchs, they're going, you know, they're against, basically, if people who make these arguments that that's why we should not support Ukraine, it's to the contrary. These arguments have really diminished in the past few years. That's why we need to support Ukraine, because they are moving in the right direction of deoligarchization, whatever that word is, and a reduction of corruption.
That's great. I think corruption will, and to your point, it really has died down from what I've seen, you know, just studying the Ukrainian politics and news, and there really is an active, like, we want to get rid of corruption. We do not want to be known for that, and you know, hats off to that administration for doing that.
Yes. I remember Serge telling me about the bridge that was started in,
2004.
Finally, after, I mean, after, you know, a decade and some. We're going to get this taken care of. This is going to get completed, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's really encouraging to see that. I would also say, and I'm sure you probably view this as well. So, one of the guys that I listened to a little bit is Peter Zeihan. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all, but he's talked about how, you know, Russia looking at Ukraine, and obviously I feel like they're now having to reassess a bunch of things maybe, but even that, it's not like their thoughts wasn't if they took Ukraine. It was like when they take Ukraine, where are they going next type of scenario.
Sure.
And his concept was more so, that's the reason why NATO, or, you know, I guess the West period, should be looking at this as if, listen, it's not a matter of if, it was more of a mindset of when, in their mind, of when you were going to end up confronting the Russians on quote unquote NATO soil or somewhere further down in Europe, Poland, Latvia, all these different places, which is all the more reason why you need to stop it now type of scenario.
Well, I mean, there is more reasons than that. First of all, there is a Budapest Memorandum that was signed in 1994. where Ukraine has willingly gave away its third largest arsenal of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And we had an explicit agreement in Budapest where there was Great Britain, United States of America, and Russia that has guaranteed the sovereignty of Ukraine. Now, one of the guarantors, Russia itself, has actually completely violated any possible international law, including the Budapest Agreement. Yeah. But United States actually vowed for Ukraine and said, we will protect your sovereignty. We will help you to protect your sovereignty. So this is our responsibility on the legal side. We actually promised that we will do that. So there's no thing, you know, when I hear like people like Tucker Carlson, Candace Owen, who know nothing about the situation, I just want to vomit because they're so incompetent about the situation. They know nothing about it. And so basically we have this legal precedent. But besides that, even strategic precedent, think about this.
Oh, man.
If we allow Russia or any other dictatorship to actually conquer other nation without sort of repercussion, what does that make China do to Taiwan?
Right.
Exactly. What does that make other countries, other dictatorships do about the territories that they're trying to capture? So I think this is direct interest of the United States, and that's why we are pouring billions of dollars into this fight, because this is our fight. Out of all the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, I'll tell you, this is the one war that is truly worth fighting for Americans. Yeah. It's in the direct interest of America to win this war. So all of the rhetoric that is coming from people who say otherwise means they're either being brainwashed by propaganda or just incompetent.
So do you think that Russian propaganda, like you were saying, you know, about Tucker and Candace Owens, do you think that propaganda that the Russia has been putting out has essentially clouded their vision or judgment to really think clearly about Ukraine?
Look, there are a couple things here. So one thing, clearly, they know nothing what they're talking about. Yeah. I just heard some of the things, especially Candace Owens. She says, I do my research. She knows nothing about it. I mean, it's just embarrassing how inaccurate the facts that she brings are just not a fact, are completely the opposite. And Tucker is more of a performer. You know, he just likes to, you know, he's not even, he said himself, he was sued a couple times, you know that. And so, and he was, his defense was, look, I am not a politician, I'm a performer. And that, I can say whatever I want. I should not be held accountable because, you know, I'm not supposed to tell the truth.
Right.
So that sort of was his defense. So what do you expect from him?
Yeah.
But then I think that there is also this narrative, which is unfortunately always true for both parties, Democrats and Republicans. Whenever somebody's in the office, let's say it's Democrats in the office, the Republicans will fight the narratives that are defended by the Democrats, no matter what they are.
Right.
So if, you know, Democrats supporting now Ukraine, sending billions of dollars of Ukraine. So let's just point out how bad the Democrats are. You know, so there could be genuinely just this political fighting. And I presume that if there was, you know, Republicans who were running the government now and they were sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, you would find a lot of Democrats that would say, why are you doing that? You know, it's not our war and things like that.
Right.
So there is definitely a Russian propaganda side, but there is also this, you know, clash between the two parties that we just have naturally.
Do you think if President Trump was still in office, things would be different?
Oh, I think we would lose Ukraine entirely. Mm.
Why do you say that?
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, very simple, because if you look right now at the past six bills that were passed.
Yeah.
In support of Ukraine. So it's a land lease. Mm-hmm. It's the billions of dollars of aid. It's stopping business with Russia, all of these bills. We have the almost unanimous support. It was incredible. The only people who voted against are all from Republican side, and they're all big supporters of Trump. Trump himself pointed many times that he thinks that Putin is a great leader. He's a genius. He's this, he's that. So, you know, basically, I'll tell you this. When he met with Zelensky, he said, hey, Volodymyr, just, you know, make sure that you figure out how to deal with Russia. That's it. You know, you will figure out for yourself. So I think that if Trump was here, And I'm going to do everything that I can as a Republican that Trump doesn't win the next time. I understand that there's been a strong support among Slavs, among us, for Trump in the past.
Yeah, very much
and,
so.
I mean, look, I completely supported Trump, especially when he appointed conservative judges and things like this. We cheered for that. I mean, that was a great victory for, you know, people who have Christian values. It was for freedoms and other things. But, you know, for me, it's just because of what has happened, especially with Russia. I mean, we as a Republican Party, we always stood for things like liberty, freedom, against tyranny. And today we have these ultra-right, very conservative Republicans that are actually completely going against that narrative. And for me, I actually want to have a Republican to win the election, but I definitely don't want for Trump to be that person.
No, I mean, I have to, I mean, I'm right along the same lines as you are on that front. And that's just been a, especially when I just consider the fact that, you know, people keep feeling like war is never, I mean, I think for the longest time, and as a millennial, we just did not have like a major, right? I mean, or, you know, or, you know, in America, we could have Iraq and Afghanistan, but we could still go down to our local Starbucks and get a coffee every single day, like nothing was interrupting it, right? And, but what I feel like is people just became such I don't say pacifists, but like they just didn't want to acknowledge the fact like there still could be a greater evil coming. And if Putin has done anything to showcase over the past 20 years, it's the thing that I don't like right now is, and I'm curious how you feel about this, making peace with Putin right now in some capacity. To me, it just seems like you are, even though you don't want war to continue necessarily, the problem is he's made it abundantly clear. He just looks forward to every little piece of grab he wants and then waits. And this seems to be the Russian mindset overall, and then continues the attack again. So it's almost kind of like this has to end now. There has to be something in some capacity that says you can't keep doing this anymore. You can't annex Crimea. You can't annex the Donbass all the time. And, like, this is not a good thing. So.
Yeah, look, we tried the appeasement before, before 1939. We tried that with Hitler, saying, hey, just take a little bit of this territory, but don't go any further.
Yeah.
And you know how it ended. It ended with the Holocaust. So this is exactly the same situation. If we give this to Putin, again, what that will mean that China should go with Taiwan and other countries should, again, whenever they want something, they should just go for it because there's not going to be any repercussions. So absolutely, there cannot be any peace with Russia in any appeasement of Russia. And so any rhetoric that somebody says, well, Ukrainians should just lay down their weapons and sort of negotiate with Putin. What to negotiate for? He wants to destroy Ukrainian people as a nation.
Right.
There is a RIA News report that came sometime, you know, at the beginning of this conflict. This is a state-owned media of Russia that literally published an article of how this genocide should be committed. Wow. It's been translated by Timothy Snyder. He's a professor at Yale, a very famous historian. And he basically called Russia for what it is. They said that they are fascists. Today, they're like exactly like Nazis, and we should call it as it is. It's a genocidal, you know, country that is trying to eliminate, eradicate another nation. So what kind of appeasement can work? I mean, we tried that with Hitler. It ended in the Holocaust.
Yeah, exactly. Well, switching gears a little bit here, Roman, and I know your time is short, but Ukraine is going to win the war. And what does the future look like for Ukraine once they win this war? And more specifically, what does actually winning look like? Maybe you can answer that those two questions.
Yeah, so let's start with the first one. Absolutely, Ukraine is going to win. There is no question about it. The question is of time and of price.
Yeah. Right.
So how many Ukrainians will die? Because all the Ukrainians are willing to fight. Nobody's going to give an inch of their land. And Russians are completely demoralized. They don't even know what they're fighting for. A lot of soldiers, the army is completely ineffective, and that's been just proven over and over again. Now, of course, the question is of the price. You know, the prices can be very high in terms of the lives, Ukrainian lives. And so that's why we need weapons. We need the support from the West as much as we can get. And we need airplanes. We need F-15s. We need tanks. We need the long range missiles.
Yes.
These are the essential things that are needed to win this war with minimal casualties on the Ukrainian side. When will this happen? It will happen when we get these weapons in time. Mm-hmm. So basically, I believe that the war could have been over even by the end of 2022. If Ukraine was given all the resources right now, you have seen how swift the capture in Kharkiv happened. Literally in 5 days, Ukraine captured more territories than Russia has captured in 6 months.
Yeah, that's true.
In 5 days. It was the greatest counter-offensive in history since the World War II. So, I mean, imagine if these are the kind of people that if we give them what they need, I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, this war will be over much, much sooner than later. Mm-hmm. Now, realistically, I do think that it will go into 2023. And I hope by sometime the middle of 2023, the end of 2023, it will be over. Now, how does this look like? I mean, there's many scenarios that this can go. Mm-hmm. One thing, Ukraine can completely kick out Russian forces out of Ukraine, which is could happen, if you've seen, if once you break the line of defense, then Russians run. They're really good at running. You know, once you kick right. their butt, they're really good at mm-hmm. running, and they have proven. By the way, they have left in Izum and around areas, they have left more equipment to Ukrainian troops than Germany has donated in the past half a year altogether in one day.
It's the Russian so land lease, right?
Yeah, this is the biggest land lease, you know, that the Russia has offered to Ukraine. So obviously there is a potential and desire and the will and courage to do that. This could happen. This could happen, and it could happen, within the next year or so. Now, another scenario is that there will be some ceasefire. Part of the troops will be pulled back significantly. And then Crimea, for example, mm-hmm. is going to be very difficult to take it with a military force. So I would presume that there will be, some sort of a stalemate for some time, when there would be, Crimea would be cut out from the rest of Ukraine. And because literally you would need to shell the cities, Ukrainian cities, and Ukrainians would not be willing to do it, while we would continue sanctions and drain Russia. And then there will be some sort of, peaceful, long process to actually get Crimea back to Ukraine. And of course, there is a third scenario that Russia can just dissolve, because Putin is going to die one day. There's a lot of people that are already uprising. Even today, you can already see that rhetoric of even the propagandas have changed.
Right,
where they start blaming Russian government, or at least somebody in the government who made a miscalculation, right. And this and that. Right. So there are different ways that this war can end. And when it will end will depend very big time on United States, UK, and European Union. What will happen? What's the future for Ukraine? It's bright. It's bright. It's amazing, I believe. And not only me, Kurt Volker, who is a special representative and U.S. And NATO ambassador, he is a good friend of mine. He believes that this will be the biggest victory, the biggest recovery in the history, bigger than even what has happened after the World War II, because literally the whole world is willing to pull the resources and put it behind Ukraine, to integrate Ukraine in Europe. Other people that I've spoken to, big investors. Yesterday, I was in New York, where I spoke to a room of investors and venture capitalists. There was about $40 billion worth of capital sitting in the room.
Wow.
And these people were saying, look, this is going to be the most... I mean, one of the investors, he said, look, we already created a fund, $50 million that we're going to invest in Ukrainian startups.
Okay.
Just like that, And so we have these people that are willing to come along. And Ukraine will be a very attractive investment of opportunities, because there's so much potential to growth. I mean, U.S., we grow 2% of our GDP per year.
Right.
In Ukraine, we can multiply that times 10 for foreseeable future. So there is a huge potential for Ukraine to grow, and it's a huge potential for businesses. So, and on top of that, the countries are willing to help out. The World Bank is there. The IMF is there. So there will be a lot of help. And that's why I do believe that the future is bright.
Yeah, I was telling Peter, you know, that Ukraine, the fall of Russia really is probably going to be even bigger than the fall of the Soviet Union, just because of all the geopolitical untanglement that's going to happen with the territories in Russia. And so, yeah, we're looking forward to that day.
And that's actually, I mean, hats off to Ukraine, just period. I mean, overall for this to, because I feel like we're now actually getting the true perspective of the Russian mindset, the Russian, also how weak in a way they really actually are, which maybe, I don't know if this is a good question to maybe somewhat, because I know you're respectful of your time, but when you look at Russia now in this capacity, I mean, even people like Zihan just simply states now, their ability to project is going to go down significantly. I mean, to your point, if we Ukraine has done a counteroffensive of such a magnitude with if in a way, with one hand tied behind their back because they don't have all their equipment, right? And they were able to do that.
Yeah.
These weapons that Russia, quite frankly, sells to many countries are not standing up to the West's weapons at all, let alone when they're trained properly. And once again, they don't have their long-range missiles in the HIMARS and things of this nature. It just seems like we are watching, you know, and now just, you know, Azerbaijan just feeling like, hey, why not? Let's go do something right now. You know, Syria, that's not looking good. Yeah, I just feel like there's going to be this destabilization
I hope Georgia and Moldova are going to all join and will recapture the territories that Russia has tried to capture from them. This is their time. This is, you know, exactly when they should do this. The only problem is that Georgia, for example, has people that are completely supportive of Ukraine. There is no doubt about it. But their government still has a lot of pro-Russian elements because it's the government that has been literally set up like Yanukovych in Ukraine in its time.
Yeah.
So basically, once that government is reelected, which I do believe this is the time to seize the opportunity, Russia. Now, I don't want to make any sort of predictions about the future of Russia.
Right.
But what I think I will tell you this, that, you know, Ukraine is not interested in any territories of Russia.
Right.
Yeah. Ukraine is interested in its own sovereignty, own independence. Just give Ukrainians what is there, get out of there, you know, and let Ukraine be a sovereign, independent, free nation that makes its decisions and mistakes for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's basically what Ukrainians want. They want freedom. And we, as the United States, as people of America, citizens of Ukraine, of America, we stand for freedom. This is our biggest, you know, value, if you will.
Yeah.
We have this written in the Constitution that we have this liberty that we fought for, and we signed that in the Constitution. And we, as a nation, should support any country in the world that stands for liberty. And that's why Ukraine is our partner, is our ally. And we, as Americans, should do everything that we can in order to help them to win this war as soon as possible.
That's great. Well, last question for you, Roman. Wanted to kind of put you on the spot a little bit. Want to do a little bit of a lightning round. So I want to just say a couple names, and you just tell me just in a word or two what you think. So first one is Zelensky.
He is a man of his time. He's good for what is happening right now as a leader. I would compare him to Churchill, which means Churchill was great to lead Great Britain during the World War II. As soon as the war was done, he was replaced by somebody who actually knew how to run the economy.
Right.
More competent.
Yeah, so that's how I view Zelensky. He's a man of his time.
Yep. Oleksiy Arestovych.
Oleksiy Arestovych, I like him because he has my book that I wrote on his bookshelf. So if you watch his interviews on his bookshelf every day, you will find my book on Reformation, on the Protestant Reformation, and how it impacted Ukraine. Now, of course, he's more of a populist. You know, he's not really the top expert of the field. But I think, you know, he has its role to play. I would not put too much weight for, you know, his analysis. But as I said, I like the fact that he has my book and he read it.
Good deal. Top General Valery Zaluzhny.
Oh, I love that guy. That guy, even propaganda. Today, even the Russian propaganda said that Zaluzhny is basically a very talented guy, and they have to admit it, you know? And so the things and maneuvers that he has done, he was pulling the troops, saving lives when it was appropriate, and he, when they saw the opportunity, they took it in Kharkiv. And so Zaluzhny is definitely the man of the hour.
Okay. Vladimir Putin.
I think we have a new Hitler on the horizon. And he is also the man of the hour, but he's the villain that has to be taken down. And if we want to thrive as a society, people like Vladimir Putin cannot be in leadership.
Okay. Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, he earned my respect. I didn't vote for him, but he earned my respect, especially because he united countries behind Ukraine. He took a first step to start delivering some heavy equipment to Ukraine, of course, besides Poland and Baltic countries, but I'm talking about the Western countries. He really started to put this leadership. He put in place some very significant initiatives in terms of the land lease, stopping business with Russia and all these things. But I do think that he can do way more. And I do not understand why he's hesitant to send planes or long-range missiles. Look, even with the missiles that we have right now, like the HIMARS and other things, Ukraine already can shoot into Russian territory. Yeah. So that excuse doesn't stand any logical criticism.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Emmanuel Macron. French president.
I'll say this is the worst of two evils. So basically, the lesser of two
lesser evils. Two evils.
So they had Le Pen,
who
was, you know, running. She was very pro-Putin. Macron is less pro-Putin, but, you know, he's still very French, very trying to be very democratic and calling Putin all the time, trying to appease him, which I definitely do not appreciate. But as I said, it's a lesser of the two evils.
Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Boris Johnson.
Oh, I love that guy.
I know, right? I miss him already.
I miss him too. I understand that some of the things that happened
in
his government were not the best characteristics of him. But look, he stood to the test.
Yeah.
He took the leadership. He was one of the first one to actually come to Kyiv and to meet Zelensky, despite, you know, all the risks that were around, he provided very significant help to Ukrainian troops in terms of military equipment and training of Ukrainian soldiers.
Yeah.
So he's definitely, he's definitely one of my favorite Western leaders, and I already miss him, but the new replacement seems to be also very decent.
Yeah. And last one here to round up is Olaf Scholz. German
Olaf Scholz does not have my respect because of all the broken promises. I mean, if you have a person who is a flip-flop, that's the guy. Yeah. This is the guy who would promise something and then he would find 1,000 excuses not to do it. You know, German has picked up its delivery, so I really appreciate that.
Yep.
And German has a big role to play when it comes to the tanks. They have over 2,000 tanks that, you know, a big, big arsenal. Nobody like that has in Europe, neither, you know, not Great Britain, but actually it's Germany, Leopards, some of the best tanks as well. And so they do have a bigger role to play. And Olaf Scholz also is playing, he's not really, doesn't have much support today in Germany because of his very washy position on Ukraine, because Germans are mostly supportive of Ukraine, the vast majority are, and they think that their chancellor is just being a dweeb, you know? And so for me, again, he has not earned my respect yet.
Yeah, got it. Well, Roman, thank you so much. This has been fantastic to talk to you.
I have loved this, absolutely.
Wish we could talk a little bit more, but maybe another time.
Yes.
Next time. Yeah, from my side, guys, I just want to commend you and thank you that you are bringing this to light, that you are bringing this conversation, because I think that this is as I said, the most important fight of our century.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that more Americans will hear about it, and hopefully we will be on the right side of the history. We already are.
Yeah.
But we need to be, as a nation, also entirely on the right side of the history.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Roman.
Thank you,
Hope
sir.
You have an awesome day. And we'll talk later. You. Cheers.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye. See ya.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Once again, thank you to Roman for coming on the podcast and doing the interview. Truly, truly appreciate you coming on, sir. And I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this point, you are very grateful you heard that as well.
So. Yeah, I think, I mean, even for me, I learned a lot from this podcast and kind of the specific things that Roman talked about. The things that we don't really think about and the just a different perspective has been so, so great to hear. And honestly, man, I'm just excited for the future of Ukraine.
Yeah.
I'm excited for what's going to happen once Ukraine wins this war.
And just to remind everybody, I think we want to, especially want to thank Roman, because he gave us insight into the fact of not just what he thinks the future of Ukraine is going to be, but him personally understanding, you know, with this university in Kyiv and things of this nature coming around the line, coming online and be able to train students and things of this nature. That's going to be a great, great thing to come in the future. So we look forward to giving you all an update as we know more on when that happens.
Yep.
So.
And our next episode, we'll be talking about the actual Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yes. The timeline a little bit more. Yeah,
we'll be really excited to dive into that and kind of give you guys a little bit deeper dive into what's actually happened and where things are at today. So, but in the meantime, this is a great bridge episode where you can hear Roman's thoughts and some of our own thoughts about what's been happening lately. So look forward to chatting with you guys and seeing you again.
Yep. All right. Thanks, everyone. Stick around. Those of you who listen or in your car, make it to your destination safely. For those of you working out, I hope you finish that mile. Until next time, stay present.
Cheers.